Enterprise Management 360, your main source for tech news, analysis, podcasts, and videos for the enterprise.
Hello, and welcome to this EM360 podcast. My name is Chris Stephens, and I will be your host. I'm the Research Director for Information Security with Enterprise Management Associates, an analyst firm that looks how companies manage their IT infrastructure from the data center out to the user environment and into the cloud. And I focus primarily on information security. In today's podcast, I'll be speaking with Vincent Burke, Chief Security Architect at Riverbed, and Shahzad Merchant, CTO at Gigamon. Today, we're going to talk about how to maintain visibility and security as you take your organization through the digital transformation journey and all data centers move to the cloud. Thank you for joining me today, Vincent and Shahzad. If you would first let us know a little bit about yourselves.
My name is Vince Burke. I was the CEO at a security company called FlowTrack for many years, then joined Riverbed a few years ago when our business was acquired. Most of the time, I now focus on the security capabilities of the Riverbed suite, and it's actually very opportune. We're having this podcast as we see lots and lots of enterprises moving capabilities to the cloud, running into, how do we secure, how do we maintain visibility, do we defend ourselves from the APT? So looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Shahzad, can you give us a little background on you?
So my name is Shahzad Merchant. I'm Chief Technology Officer at Gigamon. I've been here for about close to 8 years now, and I take a great interest in cybersecurity. My background has been in networking and security. I've been in the industry for about 20 years, and this is a particularly interesting time in terms of the stress COVID is putting in terms of InfoSec, in terms of IT operations, and looking to see, how we can help ease that whole journey for our customers today.
Absolutely. You mentioned the elephant in the room, and it's one that we're all dealing with a little bit. How has COVID impacted the enterprise? How has the pandemic, impacted you guys' core business? Talk to me a little bit about that.
So from our perspective, one of the biggest macro impacts of the COVID situation is that it has significantly accelerated the digital transformation journey. What used to be a two-year journey has now been compressed into 2 months. And that puts stress. It puts stress on developers. It puts stress on backend processes. It puts stress on IT and on InfoSec. And so overall, I think at a macro level, it's that acceleration of the digital transformation journey, which has really been a big outcome of the COVID situation.
I'll add to that lots of people are bringing their own devices, right? Meaning we no longer necessarily have a good visibility and control on the endpoints. We hear stories such as, we just spun up 95,000 desktops in the cloud. Normal doesn't look like normal anymore to us. Like traffic patterns have completely changed. How do we get a handle on it? How can we even begin to think about securing and maintaining some kind of reasonable amount of defense as we're moving forward with that? So that acceleration, I completely agree. Frankly, it's mad as hell right now out there.
The data that I've looked at kind of says the same thing. And I know that the acceleration continues and it's probably going to continue for the foreseeable future. But let's talk a little bit about, as that move continues to accelerate, what are some key takeaways that business leaders should consider as they move their enterprise from the data center to the cloud?
One thing that I have seen is sort of this aspect of hidden costs, where organizations have, right now we need to move, we need to go, and we'll sort it out later, which generally comes with a big surprise. And geez, this stuff is going to be a lot more expensive than we realized, which generally has a lot to do with sort of traffic patterns, right? If you don't really know what your traffic patterns are going to look like, cloud egress costs can really hurt you. But from a cybersecurity perspective, one thing that has taken me by surprise is the amount of what I want to call shadow IT that we've seen sort of crop up. And what I mean by that is, like, in the old days when you said shadow IT, you meant like somebody had an old server and they plugged it in under their desk and then, they ran whatever file server or video game off of that thing. And it was sort of outside of the bounds of what corporate IT was able to see or manage, but at least it was still inside the enterprise. What we're seeing right now is organizations where folks are spinning up their own file shares, their own Slack channels, their own servers in the various cloud providers to get their jobs done from home and effectively completely circumvent any visibility that the enterprise has on that. I've seen that as a greatly accelerating trend. Very scary, actually.
Let me add on a little bit to one of the things, Vincent, you mentioned, which is the cost, right? There's certainly the hidden cost, right? As you mentioned, the egress cost as an example. There's another hidden cost over here, which is really important for business leaders to consider as they think about their migration to the cloud. And that is the cost of running operations. The cloud is a bit of a different paradigm. And what we're finding in many customers is as they move their applications to the cloud, their processes, their tooling infrastructure is changing, and they're landing to essentially build, you know, parallel teams for their on-prem, their private cloud infrastructures, and for their cloud infrastructures. And that's a pretty big cost in terms of running two parallel teams and having two entirely different paradigms of how they manage and how they secure the infrastructure. So cost is a big issue, and it's something that organizations should really sit and think through when they sit and think about their cloud migration journey. There is a second aspect as well when you sit and think about the journey to the cloud, and that is a cultural one. It's one that's not often talked about, but culture is key. Do organizations have the right capabilities and culture to embark on that journey? And what we found is many of our customers, as they sit and think about the cloud, they don't necessarily have the tooling, the capabilities, nor the culture to truly take advantage of the cloud. And many of their cloud efforts initially get stymied for that reason as well. So I think it's important to consider the capabilities and culture of the organization as they make the transition to the cloud.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Just from the people that I've talked to, you're starting to see a lot of those same problems. Are you in a maturity place to be able to move to the cloud? Is that really in your company's best interest? I'm also seeing that the kind of back what Vince said, you have a lot of companies that are kind of going through their phase two. We moved all these people remotely, so on and so forth. Now what? Well, all the same compliance security concerns that we had before didn't magically go away. So now we got to take and spend some time trying to figure that out. I know that a lot of companies are moving workloads to the cloud, but explain the differences between moving data center capacity to the cloud and companies shifting their SaaS services. Talk to me a little bit about that.
So in general, I'll approach this from a visibility and a security angle because that's really what both Shehzad and I tend to worry the most about. We see it through that lens. What we obviously are all familiar with is the true SaaS services. And what I mean, like the place where you go in your web browser, log in and consume the application, like Salesforce.com, O365, Google Suite, what have you, right? You can kind of access that with any device you have. And those are true SaaS services. That's obviously been a growing trend, which is continuing. And then there is sort of the infrastructure as a service in the cloud, which is you spin up a virtual network. In there, you create virtual machines and you run legacy applications. And we shouldn't be kidding ourselves. Many, many enterprises rely on many, many legacy applications that work just fine in that environment. That is the right way to deploy them, by the way. But what it has done to your ability to have visibility and security is it has bifurcated. And we're essentially getting into a space where you now have more to monitor in different ways than you traditionally had when all you were monitoring were the packets and the flows in your data center, right? So to sort of accentuate that point, what you see, especially with workers bringing their own devices, accessing true SaaS services, meaning I use my iPad to connect to Salesforce.com or to my OneDrive, then as an enterprise, I no longer see that traffic, right? It's much harder to see the traffic than when it runs in a true VPC in infrastructure as a cloud, which sort of fill in the blanks there because what it has effectively done is it has greatly increased my attack surface.
Yeah, no, Vincent, that's a really good point. And I think you made a really good point of pointing out the difference between the whole SaaS versus infrastructure as a service. I would say, though, that many companies, when they say we have a cloud-first strategy, it is not very clear in people's minds what they mean by cloud-first strategy. And what we're seeing with many of our customers is that what they really mean is a SaaS-first strategy, which is that I have legacy applications, but really now there are enough SaaS applications that I don't have to invest and maintain my own applications. And so I'm going to leverage SaaS-based applications for that. And for SaaS-based applications are not available, I will continue to use my legacy applications and I'll move them to the cloud and I may re-architect them or I may do a lift and shift. But it really, in many cases, a cloud-first strategy is translating to a SaaS-first strategy. Regardless, Vincent made a really good point, which is that the security in both cases, there's a bit of a bifurcation in terms of how you think about security in that model, because your traditional models of managing security, for example, looking at network traffic in your data centers or your private cloud environment, become a little more challenging. in that world. Nonetheless, it doesn't mean that you cannot do it. It just means you have to sit and think about it a little bit differently, which is how do you acquire the telemetry data for the traffic going to the SaaS-based cloud applications, and how do you acquire the right telemetry data going to the infrastructure as a service-based applications. And there are ways to go do that, and there are ways to go feed that into the suite of tools that you have today already, but you just need to think through that before making the migration to the cloud.
Again, couldn't agree more, and you're going to have lots of different challenges when taking and moving to the cloud, and visibility being a big one of them. But let's talk a little bit about what the biggest mistakes companies new to the cloud make. There are plenty to choose from. What are the ones, and Vince, we'll start with you. What are the ones that you see companies making the most when they're taking and looking at security as they move their environment to the cloud?
That's an excellent question. So if I had to pick my number one...
You only get to pick 12.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
How much time do we have?
Yeah, exactly.
The number one I would pick is the fallacy that SaaS is more secure. And I want to explain what I mean by that. Obviously, when I am a SaaS application provider, I have my application, I know everything about my application, and I know how it's deployed, I know what my infrastructure looks like, I don't have an entire network to secure, I just have one application that we built ourselves to secure. So naturally, the application developer, the SaaS provider, is on Hamburger Hill, right? Like they're sitting on their hill and they can build their defenses and they're shooting down. And so naturally, it seems like they're doing better. And that is completely true, right? What is happening is the actual SaaS application itself is probably quite a bit more secure than a whole bunch of individual enterprises deploying that in their own data centers. However, what it has also done is the implicit belief that the applications are well secured is giving the enterprises that use those applications a false sense of security. What I mean by that is the application is secure, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the data that you as an enterprise puts in that SaaS application is necessarily protected as well. Because in the end, your data is only as secure as the users that access it, right? And we have seen recently, probably in the last decade or even more, that truly the weakest link in cybersecurity is becoming the person, right? The, you know, people are the weakest link. Spear phishing attacks, credential, brute forcing attacks. What that means is if I have a worker on their own, you know, home-owned device accessing my enterprise SaaS application, I might not have a way to validate that their system hasn't been compromised, you know, that their system isn't under control of a bad guy, and they are accessing all of the resources that I've put inside that SaaS application, right? Now, the SaaS application itself is secure, but the data that you have put inside of it is only as secure as the users that access that. And because these SaaS applications in general offer less visibility than you used to have in your own on-prem data center, you may have implicitly created a blind spot, which is also immediately my recommendation. Think about that when you deploy SaaS application for your enterprise.
I want to hit on that too, because it's an incredibly important point. And in all the noise that is the security industry, we miss that so often, that people are concentrating on their networks. They concentrate on, in this case, their application. And for some reason, we forget about the data. The great thing with CCPA, the GDPR stuff, is people are starting to realize that, hey, this data stuff matters. But data security and data inventory and data realization is absolutely critical as part of your overall security strategy. And it's one that I think is often left behind. So thank you for mentioning that, Vince. I think it's really important.
I'll add two aspects, one of which ties directly into the point that Vince made, but there's another one that I think is also important, which is one of the biggest mistakes that companies make in their migration to the cloud, and that is specifically around the world of infrastructure as a service. Even today, it is surprising. It is actually surprising how many companies do not recognize or realize that security in the public cloud world in AWS, Azure, infrastructure as a service is a shared security model. And what that means is that in some sense, security essentially above the hypervisor is the responsibility of the tenant. It's not the responsibility of the cloud service provider. You know, you can sit and think about it as security below the hypervisor, which is all the infrastructure, is the role and responsibility of the cloud service provider. But that model is still not very clearly understood. And even for those organizations that understand that, there is a crack, which is in between these two, which is security above the hypervisor versus below the hypervisor. There are cracks appearing where in an on-premise world, people could actually correlate the two because they own both. They own the infrastructure, they own the applications, and they could correlate the two and out of that discern meaningful insights. In the public cloud, because one is owned by the cloud services provider and the other is owned by the tenant, correlating the two is a little bit more difficult unless you go and look, for example, at network traffic, right? So I think that's one big mistake that companies make. The second one, which relates directly to what Vince talked about, and I'll state it another way, is that there is an over-reliance on identity and access management. And I think this is a mistake in my view, right? Because if you're so reliant on just controls based on identity and access management, then when the identity gets compromised, you are left with little else in terms of protection. And so credential compromise is becoming increasingly common, precisely for the reasons that Vince talked about, which is the weakest link in the chain is the human link. And through that, credentials do get compromised pretty easily. And so if you've not built resilience in your security strategy for the cloud and you're over-reliant on identity, access management, and credential management, then you have a problem. And so I will offer up one suggestion, which is that as you sit and think about your cybersecurity strategy in the cloud, certainly the first layer is putting in the controls around credentials and identity and access management, but you have to have other layers of security. And I think the next best place to go to in terms of sitting and thinking, how can I get telemetry? How can I derive meaningful insights? Is to look at network traffic. And there are ways to go access network traffic in the cloud as well today. And there are solutions that you know companies like Gigamon and Riverbed provide to go do some of that as well. So I think that's an important consideration when you sit and think about your cloud security.
I'll tie right into that, Chizai, because I always used to say the bad guy cannot hide on the network. Because you know, obviously, the reason I used to say that is you know, when a system gets compromised, you know, you have a lot of places and cracks you can hide. And when you're done with that system, you can probably destroy your data. However, as you're controlling that system, you will be sending command and control communications. You'll be exfiltrating data. You know, you'll be interacting, which is visible on the network. And this is something that's very comfortable with people that used to build or that currently build on-prem infrastructure, right? We collect the data, you store it in a forensically accurate manner. You have an ability to do behavioral anomaly detection on that. You have an ability to go back into it and do an investigation and incident response capacity. But when you move to the cloud, somehow this really valuable tenant is essentially forgotten. Well, we're in the cloud, we're safe now. I'd say, no. The exact same things apply. Now, what I will say to this, and then Chris, you can cut me off. Generally, when we talk about securing infrastructure, what we're trying to do is we're trying to make it easier on us to secure, and we're trying to make it harder on the attacker to compromise, right? That's the idea. If we increase the cost of their efforts, we've effectively reduced the likelihood that they will compromise us. But what has happened with people moving infrastructure to the cloud, like in VPCs and infrastructure as a service, and then neglect to put those same kinds of monitoring capabilities in place, they've effectively made it easier for the attacker and harder on themselves. And that just doesn't make any sense.
So this is exactly my point, right? Which is there are cracks in that shared security model that the bad actors are actually exploiting. And I think, you know, one of the suggestions to organizations is as you embark on your cloud strategy is think through your security model before you make the migration. Do not make security an afterthought.
I completely agree.
I completely agree too. I'll stand up for my friends over in the public cloud providers. They spend zillions of dollars a year trying to promote the shared responsibility model. And they try, they're looking for the magic words just like everybody else. When you look at the failures that you hear about in the 9 o'clock news on, you know, a cloud breach, so on and so forth, 99.99% of the time, it is a failure of the shared responsibility model. It's usually not an infrastructure failure. It's usually something that somewhere along the lines, he said, she said, they were going to do this, that, and the other thing, and it just didn't get done. And that's where that failure is. So shared responsibility model is absolutely critical when you're taking a look at your cloud strategy. So thanks for those comments.
I would also suggest to go a little bit one beyond, which is Vince pointed out, and I mentioned this earlier as well, is that when you've built your own private cloud, your own data centers, you own the infrastructure, you have the ability to look at network traffic and correlate that to application behavior. in the shared responsibility model, somehow there is a perception for even companies that have understood the shared responsibility model, there's a perception that I don't necessarily have to look below the hypervisor. I just look at the application and look at the application security. And I think that's a mistake. You have to look at things like network traffic and correlate the two to truly get meaningful insights. Otherwise, you're actually creating cracks that bad actors can actually exploit.
Absolutely. I do too. So great conversation. Kind of a corollary question that I wanted to ask along those lines is, how do you ensure the end-to-end user experience, right? End-to-end user experience and security in a time of microservices. Specifically, talk to me a little bit about unique security problems of moving DCs and FS to the cloud. Similarly, how do I monitor my cloud-based services for performance? A lot of stuff there, but I think it's all said and done. I want to understand, you know, security and UX in the time of microservices when it's all said and done, and tie some of those other things as well.
If you sit and think a little bit about what's going on in the world of microservices, applications that typically used to be monoliths have been broken up into mini applications, microservices effectively. Now, what is interesting over there is that, first of all, you've significantly expanded the surface area of attack, right? You've opened up all these microservices and they all talk to each other through APIs. And correspondingly, every one of those microservices is vulnerable to attack. But that's not the real issue. The real issue in my mind is that every microservice today is typically built either using open source technology or is built in-house or is developed by some third party externally. And because of that, there is significant inconsistency in how these microservices are developed, how they're coded up, and in terms of the security put into each one of these, right? And that's the problem. It's not that a monolith application has been exploded out into multitude of microservices and they're all talking through APIs. It's that every one of these is inconsistent in how they're sitting and thinking about the security of those microservices. So this is a problem from a security perspective. It is also a problem from a digital experience perspective, right? Because an application is no longer a relative monolith. It's actually a bunch of microservices, each one of which has its own characteristics in terms of the latency, in terms of the response times, in terms of the performance. And so putting together the overall end-to-end digital experience is a challenge when you're looking to extract meaningful telemetry data from each microservice independently. I can't emphasize how often coders and developers, when they write applications through microservices and they're putting in telemetry data through traces or through logging, there is so much inconsistency in how the information they're putting into all of that log messages, as an example, that stitching together the entire picture is a real challenge. And so for that reason, I do come back to the point I'd made earlier around security as well, is I do think that even from a digital experience management perspective, taking a little bit of control back into the operations team's hands by looking at things like network traffic goes a long way, because you're now less reliant on just the application developers and the DevOps teams in doing the right things. And you are taking charge, you're taking control back by looking at telemetry data you've discerned through the network and through the network traffic. And that way you have some control on what information you're looking at in that world. Vince, would you like to chime in?
Well, absolutely on that. And I think you're hitting the nail on the head with it. So one thing that I think is happening, this started when I was young and was like programming assembly language, because at that point I realized I could do anything I ever wanted with a computer, but it was sure a lot easier if somebody else wrote the hash table for me and I started using that, except that at this point I now depend on someone else's assembly code, right? So this has kind of continued and we've built layer upon layer and upon layer, which has made it such that we can have much more powerful applications. But these layers add complexity and they add uncertainty. Now, the power that they add is almost infinite scale out, right? It's very, very easy to create a containerized application in the cloud. And then if Black Friday arrives, I spin up capacity. In fact, it auto spins it up for me. I don't have to do anything. But also recognize that complexity adds attack surface and complexity adds difficulty understanding if you're getting where the holdup is in your digital experience, so to speak. So more than ever, I think we're coming to a place where this complexity cannot be manually managed any longer, right? We need good technologies to understand the complexities of our application delivery. Now, there's two aspects to that I want to point out. The first one is that in the end, they're still computers. We're talking packets, we're talking flows, we're talking API calls. As we move to SaaS, as we move to infrastructure as a service, as we move to containerization, in the end, what is still communicated are small packets of information flying around, and we know exactly how to monitor those, right? And how to secure those. We have the experience with that as a society. The second thing I will also mention is that as we move the cloud and the SaaS, something else has happened. In the old days when I had, well, the old days, when I have a data center and my applications run in the data center and I have an office, which I have a perhaps an MPLS link or I am sitting right next to my data center, I control the entire path from the worker all the way to the resource, right, which is sitting in my data center. We are no longer in complete control of the full path as users because I have applications in a VPC in the cloud, or I have applications running as SaaS, but the worker may have their own device and their, well, in the old days, I was at the airport working from the airport all the time. Now I'm working from home for the time being. The coffee shop is another example, right? So this is only going to get worse or more complex because we see a convergence of Wi-Fi and cellular networks with 5G coming. Very soon, I'll have no idea whether my laptop is using a cellular network or a Wi-Fi network and which Wi-Fi network to get to the application. So as this layer of power is added, another layer of complexity is added. And in the end, it all comes down to how much of these segments can we monitor? What can we understand about it? And can we tell the CIO what the business impact is of the digital transformation that they're making?
I totally agree with all of that. I guess I would even go so far to say is that when you start thinking about the key tenets of security in any of these environments, you know, visibility has always got to be near the top. And if you can see things, you can at least start the idea of how you're going to protect those things. So again, I want to thank you for that because it's right on point with what I believe. When I think about what are the key considerations of the public cloud, I do think about visibility. So when you think about what are some of the key considerations about visibility in public cloud, what are some of the elements that you're looking for?
A couple of things. First is, I think it's important to recognize we live in a hybrid world, right? In other words, it's not about everything running in AWS or Azure or everything running in an on-prem world or in a private cloud. I think we live in a hybrid world. And so one of the most important considerations in my mind is to ensure visibility in a hybrid environment and consistent visibility in a hybrid environment. In other words, I should have equivalent visibility in my data center and in my private cloud environment. And if I don't, then I have a problem, right? So you have to ensure that paradigms you've put in place, the processes you put in place to acquire telemetry data for your visibility work across your private cloud, your public cloud, and in fact, even in a SaaS world as well. So that's number one. The second consideration I would say is does come back to cost as well, right? Which is how do I make sure that my tooling, my processes, my resources, my manpower, I don't have to replicate or duplicate those as I think about a hybrid environment, right? I want my tools to work in a private cloud environment. I want them to work in a public cloud environment. And I don't want to have to pay double to have two sets of tools or two teams managing this entirely differently. That's a big consideration. And so I think consistency of visibility in a hybrid world and essentially being able to do more with less in this environment is going to be pretty critical when you sit and think about the cloud.
I like that. I like what you just said. I like both points you just made. But the thing I like especially about it is the number of times, and we've all seen this, I've seen it both from building applications to deploying applications to consulting with, you know, building cyber hunt teams for organizations, right? Invariably, what you see is people saying, yeah, I manage the on-prem infrastructure, and here I've got my three tools that I really like for that. And then you get someone who is either deploying an application or managing the cloud data centers or the SaaS applications. Well, I got a whole different set of tooling. Then you get the cybersecurity group who goes like, no, we really rely on the following 6, 20, 50 tools, right? And what ends up happening is when the stuff hits the fan, everybody's using different tools. Everybody has a different type of telemetry. There's no normalization, and they all speak a different language, right? This goes right back to the cost factor, the hidden cost factor you mentioned earlier, where it's like we have different teams using different tooling. Now they speak a different language. They can't translate from one set of telemetry they've been collecting to another set of telemetry they've been collecting. the inefficiency compounds and the time to resolution gets even longer. So I really agree with that point. I like it.
And Vince, I'm not about doing a shameless plug as well, right? So I do think I'll make the comment that when you sit and think about solutions to that problem, I think Gigamon and Riverbed have done a pretty good job at trying to address some of these challenges, right? When you sit and think about acquiring telemetry data in your private cloud, public cloud, Gigamon's a premier vendor. We do a fantastic job at extracting network telemetry data, regardless of where your applications and workloads are. And Riverbed is a great player in terms of analyzing that technology and giving you meaningful insights into that as well.
Well, yeah, no doubt about that. As partners, we've done well together because we've serviced the most complex of environments together in terms of how can we get a unified view of the telemetry and how can we store that for forensic investigation? How can we analyze that for performance so that indeed the entire enterprise, both from a security and a network operations and a cloud perspective, is looking at one and the same consistent picture? Yeah, that's absolutely true.
One of the other questions that I have when talking about visibility is that even in our own data center on-prem environments, do we have a good handle of everything that's in the environment? I talk to people over and over again that just seem to be missing that one key thing, and your audits will show you that as well. How do you get a handle on all the applications and infrastructure that is running in the cloud? How do you know that you're getting a complete picture?
That's starting point number one, right? The point you made earlier, visibility and security go hand in hand. I would even go as far as to say that if you can't see it, you can't secure it, right? Like that's very simple. The very basic foundation of security is being able to collect telemetry and, you know, preferably collect telemetry from many angles so you get a really good chance of at least seeing when the bad stuff goes on. Hand in hand with that goes the point of shadow IT I made earlier, right? Because what you end up seeing is as people move to new applications, workers are starting to work from home using devices that are not managed by the enterprise. What ends up happening is they sometimes struggle to do their jobs. They'll create storage accounts. They'll spin up resources that they manage themselves. And so now you have an entire sort of outside ecosystem of tools. And I think I've seen the numbers on the whole shadow IT discussion now, which is CIOs estimating that there is 50, perhaps different applications being used out of band. And then after true investigation by looking at network traffic, they find out it's over 700, right? This is like a rampant problem, which is becoming bigger and bigger. So the simple idea of like, look, I've got an asset database or I have an inventory of applications being used and that's my starting point is by far and wide not enough. Like the best fighting chance you stand to get some kind of idea of what your attack surface is, where your data is moving, and which applications your business is truly relying on, both for performance business reasons as well as, you know, where am I storing my data? What's my attack surface like? It all comes back down to what's on the network. The network traffic tells the entire story. Shahzad, what do you think?
That is so spot on. I totally agree. And I will add to that, right? This, by the way, the point that Vince made is not just around shadow IT, right? You know, you will have environments in your hybrid cloud infrastructure where you have applications that people have kind of forgotten about. And the best way to identify some of these, and they're just there, the zombie in some sense, and or they're there for a good reason, but people have forgotten, you know, who's interacting with those applications, what are the processes that people are using to go talk to those applications. You will rarely come across a company that doesn't have some of these, right? You sit and think about pharma, right? You sit and think about healthcare, you sit and think about financial companies, large financial companies. They have tons and tons of these old applications that are sitting out there. And you can always come in and say, okay, this is my asset database, but there's a big difference between as discovered versus as configured. And so the best way to go do a discovery is to look at the network traffic and see what's really going on and use that as a way to go figure out the gaps between as configured versus as discovered. And you'll find pretty significant gaps out there.
I absolutely agree completely. And one of my other questions in regards to visibility is that in this time of COVID, we all have budget limitations, right? And there's no question that the COVID pandemic has really affected the bottom lines of a lot of companies. But security and visibility are still of utmost importance. How do you maintain visibility and security on a limited budget?
You're hitting upon a really important point, and we've talked about this a little bit as well, right? As we sit and think about what the world looks like through COVID and beyond COVID, I think as we sit and think about the latter half of this year and maybe even 2021, there's no question in my mind that we are going to see budgets getting compressed across all verticals, across all organizations. In that environment where there is pressure to move to the cloud, where there is pressure to digitally transform, and where there's, you know, pressure on the budgets as well, it's really a trifecta of challenges out there. And so you have to learn to do more with less. I think one of the ways to go do that is to minimize duplication of tooling, is to minimize duplication of personnel, of people who are using the telemetry data for getting meaningful insights, is to reduce this unnecessary telemetry data going into your tools. For example, if you have tools that are like SIMs and you're sending a bunch of logs, SIMs are expensive, by the way, and you're sending a bunch of logs to them that are not really being used for any other purpose other than somebody just sent a bunch of logs to the SIM, there's an opportunity to go reduce a lot of that cost. I think if you look at network traffic and the ability to tweak and tune network traffic and be surgical about what traffic is getting sent to what tools, for example, if you're deploying a Riverbed solution along with Gigamon, you can be very surgical about what information you're sending into that. Consequently, the insights you get out of that, it's far more relevant. There's a lot less noise that would spit out. And so I think you have to step back and look at this and say, how do I tweak my telemetry? How do I gain consistency across my tooling, across my hybrid cloud infrastructure? And that's one of the low-hanging fruit in terms of how do you actually reduce costs across your deployment. Vince, what do you think?
Yeah, so what I hear you say is if you deploy the correct kind of tooling, which is tooling that can give you more answers, you're able to do more work with less tooling. You're also able to, if you have a consistency of tooling in your enterprise, you can reduce inefficiencies, which saves cost in staffing, or in other terms, your staff will be able to do more and will be able to do it faster. And the final point I think you made is that when it comes to cybersecurity, history of your telemetry is absolutely key, right? Meaning I need to be able to go back, find out what moved when and where, who started what conversation first, and where did my data go, and who else is affected. Like, think about that question. You know, you finally figure out how the ransomware got on that system. You look at the traffic, you find the command and control server. What's the very next question you want to know? Who else has been talking to that command and control server so I can get on top of this thing, right? In order to answer questions like that, you need history. If you've got five different tools all roughly collecting the same data but doing only one unique little thing with it, you only have one-fifth of the history. If you have one tool and you spend all your money on that one tool, you got five times as long of a history. Now, those are the points you made, and I like those. But here's another point, Chris, I think that I'd really like to think about as enterprises are accelerating their journey to become digital enterprises, is that data in itself, and we've seen this, you mentioned GDPR, CCPA, we've seen this also in large compromises, we've seen this in environments where a contractor loaded up the backup to an S3 bucket and forgot to click the private checkbox, and subsequently somebody found it and downloaded all the data. I think that as we're starting to see enterprises move to the cloud, data becomes a liability, right? And what I mean by that is if you're collecting it and you're saving it, but you're not keeping it safe, it's going to hurt your business in the future more than it's going to help, right? And so as you move to become a digital enterprise, and you mistakenly believe that cloud data is secure, you're probably doing your enterprise a big disservice. You're assuming a very big risk. So as we move to the cloud, do not skimp on visibility. Do not skimp on telemetry collection. And think about what that entire tech service looks like. Because your data will be scattered, and it will be on many, many other services and other people's computers. So get a handle on that. Don't skimp on that particular part.
I think we could talk for an hour on data security and data in the cloud, so on and so forth. But I would go back a little bit and remind you that the checkbox that you just talked about is the perfect example of a failure of the shared responsibility model that we were talking about earlier. Again, it's one of those number one failures that people just don't understand. And it could be something, again, just as simple as a checkbox. So again, very, very valid points, both you, Vince, and Shahzad. excellent, excellent conversation. I really have just one question remaining before we kind of wrap up a little bit. And that really kind of talks about the edge. We've danced around cloud computing a little bit, but we all know that the edge is disappearing in this growing cloud world. How are Riverbed and Gigamon remaining relevant in this age of cloud computing? How about both your products and a VPC virtualizing all the monitoring and cyber capabilities? Give me some other examples and let's kind of talk about that a little bit.
It's a good question. It's a very relevant one in these times. Gigamon saw this coming a while back. It's not something that we did not anticipate. In fact, almost 18 months ago, or close to even 2 years ago, we actually went on stage and did a pretty big launch for solutions running in AWS. So we have solutions that can acquire telemetry data in an infrastructure as a service world. We obviously have solutions that work in a private cloud world. We have a fantastic relationship with VMware in that environment. And so no matter where your workloads are, AWS, VMware, and we have solutions for Azure and GCP and so on and so forth as well. We can get consistent access to telemetry data, regardless of where your applications and workloads reside. So that's not a problem. And it also doesn't matter that your workloads are running as VMs or they're running as containers. Doesn't matter. You will get consistent telemetry data regardless of the shape and form of your workloads and regardless of where they actually reside. And so we've been spending a fair amount of time building this capability out. And you will hear a lot more coming from us in the next few months on what we're doing on the service edge as well. So stay tuned for a little bit of that. But I will also add that the telemetry data that we acquire in these environments has to feed something. And Riverbed is a fantastic tool that we go field, and they provide some really good insights in these environments.
Well, it's certainly true that if Gigamon can see it, Riverbed can analyze it. And they're a great help for us there. But I want to carry that even further for you, because as we have seen people move their workloads to O365 and no longer coming from data centers or office locations, we have seen an absolute surge, especially now with COVID-19 happening. We've seen an absolute surge in people using our desktop-based accelerator products, because that is truly what Riverbed originally was known for, accelerating the digital enterprise as the move to data centers was happening. Now we're doing the same thing as the move to the cloud is happening. The beauty of being able to accelerate, for instance, an application like O365 directly from your laptop device is that it also adds telemetry. It adds visibility and it adds a measure of control. All of that bringing together with the cloud-based telemetry Shehzad already talked about, give enterprises that complete picture, both for performance and cybersecurity. So this drive will continue to happen. And as the enterprises move there, we will be there.
Yeah, that's great stuff. And I really appreciate those insights. I think that we're just about out of time. Vince, Shehzad, did you have anything that you wanted to close with real quick?
It's been a real pleasure to be here. You know, we live in an interesting developing scenarios, right? The world is evolving rapidly. I think it is not all that clear yet how it will shake out. There will be a long tail of applications running in data centers in the cloud. There will be a strong adoption of partially managed devices, if you will, from organizations. And with that, I think we are going to see this idea of data as a liability becoming increasingly important, both from, you know, the perspective of what legislation is doing right now, as well as which legislation, by the way, can get complex, right? We can see what happens if individual municipalities start enacting data privacy laws. How does one manage that?
I sure hope it does, just from a common sense perspective, if nothing else.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it's totally true. Data is a liability. We must take it upon ourselves to make sure that it is absolutely, under all circumstances, secure. Moving to a digital environment such as cloud and SaaS spreads that data. And it is more important now than ever for enterprises to think about what that means and get the visibility on that data, so you stand a fighting chance of keeping it out of the hands of the bad guys.
Shehzad, did you have anything that you wanted to wrap up with?
I'll close with just, you know, a quick line or two saying that we live in a very fluid environment. A workplace fluid world is what I call it. And in this world, it is really important to make sure you can do more with less, because things are constantly changing. Budgets are beginning to tighten up. And at the same time, the requirements from a security, from a digital experience management perspective are actually becoming more stringent. And so it is really important that in this world, you have to find ways to do more with less, to have consistency of telemetry to have consistency in your processes, to not have to replicate your tooling, to replicate your teams, and think through all of that before you actually even make the step of embarking onto the cloud. Put the thought behind that, and you will find that your cloud journey becomes a lot more easy if you've done that.
That's fantastic. Well, thanks, Vince. Thanks, Shahzad, for a very, very insightful conversation today. And thank you to everybody who listened to our conversation. If you'd like more information on what we discussed today, make sure that you head over to riverbed.com or gigamon.com for more information. Thanks again.
You've been listening to the EM360 podcast. For more great content, head on over to em360tech.com.